everybody, what's up? Welcome back to THC. My name is Kimmy, and every week I sit down and I smoke and I tell you a true crime story. So if that is your vibe, then make sure you subscribe and follow the podcast on social media at Truly High Crime. We are on Instagram and Twitter at the moment. A website is being built, which is cool and fun and exciting, and maybe I'll make a Facebook or something. I don't know how to use TikTok, so I don't know if that'll ever happen. But anyway, I'm just going to shut up, stop rambling, and advise you to buckle up so that we can get into the story of Emma Filipov, because where did she go? I have a lot of questions. Emma Filipov has been missing since November 28th of 2012. She was last seen in front of the Empress Hotel in Victoria, British Columbia in Canada when she was 26. People go back and forth on this one. A lot of people think she left on her free will. A lot of people think that something bad happened, but her family and her friends have never given up hope in finding Emma, so let's just tell her story. We're starting in the fall of 2011 when she moved from Perth, Ontario to Victoria, British Columbia. She was 25 years old and she had always wanted to just move out west and live out there, so she was like, you know what, I'm gonna freaking do it. She didn't really have plans, she was just kind of going for it. She was like, you know what, I will just figure it out when I get there. For right now, I just want to get there, which I absolutely respect. And she told a friend before she left that she thought that something amazing was going to happen to her while she was there. So she's like really optimistic. Life is like really, really good for her right now. She was a free spirit and she finally got to move out west the way she always wanted to. Like, life is good. Things are looking up. She gets there, and at first she was staying with a childhood friend and their partner for a couple months. And then she got her own unit in that same building. And after a few months of being there, she actually got a job working as a barista at a local cafe, but that didn't last very long. After she got the job, she just kind of realized she wanted to live a more, what was called, transient lifestyle, so she was just kind of doing whatever she felt natural to her at the time. She moved around a lot, and she was just kind of like doing whatever worked for her. There are no reports of her having like a bad time. She was just young, living life. I think a lot of people hear like, oh, she was living a transient lifestyle, so they think maybe like dangerous, but she wasn't really into drugs. Like, that wasn't her style. She drank occasionally and like she ends up quitting, but we'll get there. But she really didn't live a very high risk lifestyle. She was just doing what she wanted. She didn't have like a solid job or anything like that. Like, she just was living, you know? She lived with another friend for a little while. She also lived at the hotel where she was working as a cleaning lady. She also stayed on people's boats. She also just kind of slept in the woods or slept in the trees sometimes. Like, she did whatever she wanted to do that night. And honestly, that sounds so much fun. Like, what rich people did she know that let her stay in their boats? Like, that's amazing. And how good of a person do you have to be to just like flow around and people know you well enough and trust you and respect you to be like, oh yeah, it's Emma. Of course she can stay on my boat. Like, that's amazing. And she really kind of just like hung out with everybody. She liked to hang out with the people in the houseless community. She was friends with a lot of them. She was also friends with the rich boat owners at the marina. She was friends with a lot of the artists and the street performers in the area. Like, she really just got along with anybody. And she was described as free-spirited. She was creative. She was adventurous. She was very giving. She was soft-spoken. She was really private. She didn't tell anybody really what was going on in her life. And that's gonna kind of come up later. She was also really independent, and she was also highly sensitive to people, is what she called herself and her family called her. She was caring, she was a writer, she loved to travel, and something I love that they added is that she loved to ask intrusive questions, because, like, me too, girl, I get it. I like to just dig right in. But anyway, I probably would have had such a crush on her if I met her. That's pretty much all I'm saying. And despite being this, like, amazingly open person who loved to listen and talk and make friends, she never told her own thoughts or her own struggles. She was really, really, really private. She would say things like, I love my family, but she wouldn't really like talk about her family or discuss the details of what was going on or who they were or anything like that. So she really just kind of like made it so that other people would talk to her about their life, but she didn't really talk that much about hers. From February through November of 2012, she was actually like going back and forth staying in the Sandy Merriman Women's Shelter. She wasn't there like all the time or full time or anything like that. She would stay for about a month at a time, and she'd be in and out. Sometimes she'd stay with friends or she'd be on a boat or something like that. But starting in February until she went missing, she did stay in that women's shelter for about a month at a time. She worked at a restaurant called Redfish Bluefish for the busy season, and she was a cook there. And she was expected to go back the following February when busy season picked back up. But, you know, if you've ever worked in a restaurant, you know how freaking slow those winter months can be. They were like, yeah, we don't really need you anymore, but come back when it's going to start getting busy again. Throughout this whole time that she was gone, she maintained contact with her family and her friends that were back at home. They said that they got cryptic, poetic, upbeat emails from her, and they would get phone calls on holidays and stuff, but they didn't know that she was living in a shelter. My guess is that she just didn't want them to worry, but like, what the hell do I know? Like, that's just absolutely my guess. She could have had her reasons. I really have no idea. But Emma's friend said that by the time it was summer of 2012, Emma was ready to start living a more like pure and clean lifestyle. This is when she quit drinking, she quit smoking cigarettes, and she also like cut out coffee and sugar from her diet. So this was all in June of 2012. So she just wanted to go organic. She was also vegan. And it was around this time that she bought a van, and she wanted to live in this van so that she could travel the island she was living on, and she could travel all around Canada and have a place to live. And all of her coworkers and all of her friends, everybody said that she was really excited about the van, and she was looking forward to having her independence again. She just was like really thinking that she found the solution to the kind of like dumpy way she was, not dumpy, the kind of just like shitty way she was feeling of like, what am I gonna do next? Like, I think we all get to that point sometimes where it's like, okay, I've been doing that for a second, but like, what am I gonna do now? So she was excited. So like I said, she was vegan, but by late summer, a lot of her friends noticed that she was not eating a lot at all, and she was drinking like a shit ton of water every day. A friend said that she got really skinny and described her as, quote, monk-like in her social and eating habits. I don't really know what that means. I'm not gonna sit here and try to like guess or say that I do. I have no idea what they meant by that. But if you're not eating a lot throughout the day and you're drinking a lot of water, your body is just like flushing itself out. Like, she probably was like having health issues, and that can start to make you feel crazy. She also started like distancing herself from her friends at the end of the summer, like going into the fall season. She was going through this like weird time of the changing seasons of like, what am I gonna do now? Am I gonna keep living in my van throughout the fall and winter? Like, what's going on? Or like, what should I do? And she was acting super paranoid also. And her friends were like, this kind of came out of nowhere, but she just kind of started acting super paranoid about everything. So she has that van, and at first it was really, really great, but then it kind of became a financial burden. It ended up getting towed 3 times, and it was just having issues that she just couldn't afford to fix. So towards the end of the year, Emma was really wanting to travel. She wanted to see somewhere new. She wanted to move. Like, she just was ready to do more. And in mid-November, she told a friend that she was thinking about going to Salt Spring Island or maybe somewhere in the British Columbia. And her friends say that she reported a lot of different plans, a lot of different ideas. Some of them were to sail on a boat to Mexico, to move to San Juan with this dude she just met. Some of them were to move to California or go to Costa Rica or go to Japan with her dad or live off the grid in the woods or surprise her family back home in Perth. So that's kind of a very wide range of different plans. She had a lot of thoughts going on in her brain. Like, sounds to me like maybe she was just like overstimulated. Like, I don't think she was on anything, but I think her mental illness made it so that she just had all these thoughts and she couldn't get them organized. She didn't know what she wanted to do. She was just kind of like trying to do something and do it soon so that she could get it figured out. So November 21st, just a few days before she went missing, her van was towed. She had the tow truck driver come pick her up and then take her to the car, and the driver said that she was like super duper upbeat during this drive. Apparently, she said that she was planning on surprising her family back at home and she was gonna move back there. And like, she was just in a really, really good mood that entire ride. But like I said before, Emma was very private, and that could have led to her just like not talking about her mental health issues and then them getting worse as that happens, you know? After she went missing, her family went through her journals that they found, and they said that her journal showed that she was probably suffering with mental illness issues since she was like 11 years old, and she, all in private. Like, she never told anybody about it. And, like, since you're 11 and you're now 26, like, that's a lot boiled up in there that you have never told anybody about. Girl. Ooh, that's hard. They said, quote, "For years, her secretive and quiet nature enabled her to hide her inner turmoil from family and friends," end quote. That would be really, really tough. If you've got all that year, all those years of trauma and mental illness, like, built up in you and you've never talked about it, there is a lot going on up there. The friend that she initially moved in with in 2011 when she first got to Victoria said that she was a little bit worried about Emma when she saw her, like, obsessively arranging different patterns with, like, shells and food and rocks and stuff like that. And she just kind of was just, like, she took note of it, like, okay, that's not something that all mentally healthy people do. I'm going to remember that happened. That same friend said that she had also called Emma's dad, James, after finding Emma in, like, a euphoric state in the middle of the night, just, like, laying outside looking at the stars. Emma was, like, really pissed that her dad was called, and her dad was like, "Why don't I get you a flight home? Like, let's just, like, come home for a little while. We'll get things figured out." And she was like, "Fuck no, I'm not going home." And she was pissed. But Emma's parents were divorced, and her dad never told her mom about this whole incident, which literally, dads, like, do I have to say anything else? And her mom says that if she knew that this happened, she would have immediately flown out to go see what was going on with Emma, which literally just tells you the night and day difference between a mom and a dad. Emma was also really stressed because she was being stalked, or she thought she was being stalked or harassed by somebody who she had a bad experience with a few years before when she lived in Campbell River and she studied culinary arts. Like, what didn't this bitch do? I love her. Like, what an absolute legend to just try everything out. Like, I feel like she just did everything. But because she was so private about everything, none of her friends really knew any details about this guy or who he was. She never said his name, and she never even said his name in her journal either. So the police and the investigators really had nothing to go off of with that. Like, they knew she thought it was happening, but they had no idea of finding who it was. Except they kind of did. Like, why don't you just go to the culinary school, find out, like, if any of her classmates there remember? Like, I feel like that definitely could have been pushed more and just maybe wasn't. I don't know. Her roommate said that she would avoid social situations with men, which is why she would not stay in co-ed shelters. Which it's like, girl, I get it, same, but that just screams trauma. Like, she had to have gone through a lot, and she was very private, and she didn't talk about it. Like, there is a lot in that brain, and it just makes me really sad. She used to be really known as friendly and social and playful, but by November of 2012, her friends say that there was a really dramatic change to her personality. She didn't want to do anything. She didn't want to go anywhere. She had canceled a trip to Mexico with one of her best friends, like, very last minute, was like, "Nope, I'm not going anymore." She was honestly, like, scared to be anywhere that wasn't the pier or the shelter. Something so scary must have been going on, like, either in real life or in her mind, that she didn't even feel safe enough to write about it in her journal. Like, I feel like something happened that even she couldn't force herself to admit, or she didn't even want to, like, tell herself that it happened. 2 weeks before she disappeared, a friend said that they were driving past the shelter, and while they were driving past, they saw Emma standing outside looking, like, cold and wet, just, like, staring at crows. They were just driving past, so, like, there's not really much there with that, but it is a really, really odd encounter. Like, what was she doing? At the same time, all of the staff at the shelter were, like, noticing signs of severe paranoia and depression in Emma. Her curtains were always drawn. There was this one time where she was found moving furniture from inside of the shelter to the curb because she said, quote, "They were making too much noise and they were saying things to her." So she's clearly having a breakdown. Why was there no intervention here? Like, why did nobody think, oh wait, she needs help? And I'm sure they did think that, but they didn't have the resources to give her the help that she needed. So that sucks. She even started, like, donating and throwing away her stuff. So based on that, the staff thought that maybe she was, like, suicidal or, like, really suffering with mental illness. Like, clearly, bitch, like, obviously. But because of the privacy laws, they couldn't call her parents. She was an adult, so it was like, there was not much they could do, but they did call the police and request a mental health check. The police, though, of fucking course, were like, actually, we're not going to come check, but let us know if anything else happens. Like, they're calling you now because something happened and they need your help. Why are you... I fucking hate it. And, you know, it really sucks that the police are the ones who have to give the mental health check. Like, what if we just funded shelters enough that they could have mental health officials working with them so that when the people in the shelter need it, it's there and it's accessible and it's easy. Can you imagine if we just took some money or all of the money and just dismantled the system and got rid of the police and put that towards things that could actually help people? Oh my God. The change that we would see in this world, it's unreal. Sorry, I'm getting carried away. But anyway, why don't the police ever do their job right? They don't do it at all in this whole case, and it's really just gets to me. One of Emma's friends at the shelter was really, really concerned for her, so they suggested that, like, you should go to the YMCA, and maybe you should go to the library, and just, like, get out of the shelter, like, go see a different environment, like, do the things that you'd like to do. So she did, and that friend also encouraged Emma to call her mom. Emma did just that, but before we get into these phone calls, let's take a smoke break. So, starting on the night of November 23rd, Emma started calling her mom in a very emotional state. Her mom's name is Shelley. So, in that first call on the night of the 23rd, Emma was in tears and saying that she needed to come home. And Shelley was like, "All right, you got it. I will book a flight." And Emma was like, "Thank you." And she wouldn't say why she was upset, but she does tell her mom that she's safe. And the next morning, Emma actually calls back and is like, "Don't come. I'm fine. I'll be okay. I want to stay here and I want to figure things out on my own." And Shelley, as a mom, could like tell that something was up, but she was like, "Oh my God." Like, she was like, "My daughter's an adult. Like, I need to let her try to figure things out on her own. She doesn't know how bad things actually are." And she wanted to respect what Emma wanted. So she was like, "Okay." And she canceled her flight. But later that same night, Emma called her mom and said she wanted to come home. She said she was too overwhelmed and she wants her mom to come help her pack her things and, move home. So Shelley immediately booked the flight to come get her. But you guessed it, the next morning, Emma called her mom and said she changed her mind and that she wanted to figure out on her own. Shelley said that this time she sounded a lot more, like, calm and confident, but there was still just a really, really sad, like, tone in her voice. Shelley agreed to not come, but she was like, "I'm still ready to leave at the drop of a hat whenever you need me." That night, Emma's van got towed again. Just saying. So now it's November 27th, and Shelley is just really nervous. So you remember how Emma's family didn't know that she was staying at the shelter? They are about to find out, because Shelley calls the number that Emma has been calling from. She thought that Sandy Merriman was the name of a friend, and she was shocked to find out that it was actually the name of the women's shelter that Emma was staying at. So that night, Emma called her mom in tears again and said she needed help and she wanted to come home. So Shelley makes plans to fly out the next morning. But once again, the next morning at 4:30, Emma called and said, quote, "Don't come, Mom, not today," end quote. And immediately, Shelley knew there was a change in Emma's voice and something was wrong. She knew that they had a history of mental illness in the family, and she just wanted to go and make sure that Emma was okay. Like, a mom just fucking knows what she's doing. Do not get in her way, because she is going to go check on her child. All of Shelley's friends and family were like, "No, respect her wishes. Like, you should leave her alone." But she left on a plane, and she left that afternoon. Like, she was like, "Nope, I'm going." So that night, Emma got to the shelter around 6, and the staff at the shelter told her that her mom was coming, and she got, like, visibly angry and anxious, and she left. And another resident, like, went to go, like, run after her to try to get her, but she was running. She was gone. And nobody knows how the shelter knew Shelley was coming, because she never told them that. So That part is just odd. I'm not sure if maybe like Shelly told a friend or Shelly was like, I'm like, since she called, they thought maybe she was going. I don't know. But Shelly got there that night around 11, and Emma had not been in since she ran out at 6. She wasn't there for bed check. So right around midnight, the shelter called the police to report Emma as a missing person. What if, and hear me out, the cops just fucking did their job earlier, but like I said, the cops shouldn't even be the one doing the mental health checks. I just wish that this shelter was like equipped with what they needed to help people who were mentally ill, because a lot of people who are in shelters are mentally ill and just need help, and they're not getting it, and calling the police isn't going to help. Like, can you just imagine? Imagine. So now I want to kind of like really dig into the timeline of the day that Emma disappeared up until the time that she was last seen. She called her mom at 4:30 a.m. So, early start to her day. Not sure if she hadn't slept yet, like early day. Around 7 a.m., she is seen at the Chateau Victoria, which is a hotel in the area, where she parked her van. And there was a notice on her van that it was going to be towed, and that really upset her. So she asked the staff of the hotel for one more day, and they said yes. So that's nice. At 8:23 a.m., she was seen on 7-Eleven security footage, and she used her debit card to buy a $200 prepaid credit card. She was wearing a beige winter jacket with camo pants, and her hair was up in a bun. She has like a bunch of bags over her shoulders, and she's also holding her bright orange purse. She stays by the doors of the store the entire time she's in there, and she's like nervously looking out the window, and like it looks like she's making sure nobody can see her, or like making sure like somebody's not there or somebody's still there. Like she just looks very on edge and uneasy. At around 10 a.m., an old friend of Emma's named Julian Huard saw her on the sidewalk. She was standing right on the edge of the sidewalk, like she was like one step away from the road, standing very close to the road. Gives me anxiety. I hate when I'm driving and there's people that are like standing on the sidewalk, like they're trying to cross, but it's like busy. And if they literally took like a half a step, I would hit them with my car and it wouldn't even be my fault because they just like stepped into the road. It scares me. So it scared him too. And he saw that she was like just standing there. She was wearing a puffy, light colored coat, and her hoodie was like over her head, and her hair was like flying around all over the place. This time she had a bunch of plastic bags in her hands, and she had all the bags all over her shoulders. He didn't really see her. He just like saw that it was her, and then he went about his business. But he finished doing his business, whatever it was he was doing, and when he was walking, like when he was leaving, he saw that she was still standing there. She was completely motionless, literally just like standing on the corner. So he like stepped in front of her, trying to get her attention, and was like, "Hey, do you need any help?" And all she did was like very slowly shake her head no. So he left and didn't really do anything about it. That was really it. Sometime around noon, it's reported that Emma went to the library, and then soon after, in the early afternoon, a friend saw Emma near a soup kitchen. She said that she wasn't feeling well and that she couldn't talk, and at that time her hair was messy and all over the place, and her friend was like, "Oh, do you need a hug?" And then Emma like retreated and like looked away from her friend with a quote, uncharacteristic horrified look on her face, end quote. Like no, and walked away and was like, "Gotta go, bye." Then around 1 p.m., somebody says that they see Emma walking alone down the same street that everybody else has seen her on. They said that she looked, quote, vacant-eyed, but this time her hair looked like it was freshly washed and she's got no hat on or anything. She still has a bunch of plastic bags and her purse on her and all those other bags and stuff. She's wearing those camo pants, and this time she's wearing a white fleece jacket. Two people claimed that they saw her on a different street walking around that afternoon, and they said that they were concerned about her because she was just like walking back and forth. She looked really paranoid. She looked confused. She looked like she was lost, like they didn't know what was going on. So they called the police, who took a report, but it is unclear if they ever followed it up, which probably fucking not. Another witness claims that they saw Emma that afternoon walking downtown with an older man, but they couldn't provide a description of the older man, so it was just kind of like, okay, thanks. A man who stayed at the Rock Bay shelter claims that he saw Emma that afternoon, like at that shelter, but he doesn't give any other details. And everybody kind of doubts this sighting because that was a co-ed shelter, and we know that Emma refused to stay in those. So between 4 and 6 p.m., Emma was seen by the same person twice at two different locations. First, they crossed paths as the witness was leaving a shopping center. Emma was moving really, really slowly with her hair, like, flowing out of her hood. I don't know why every report mentioned what her hair was doing. So I did too. So her hair was flowing out of her hood, and 45 minutes later, they saw Emma again while they were in a car, and Emma crossed the street in front of them and kind of like turned their head and looked at the person and gave them a little smile, but then just kept walking. So this witness reported it to the police, and the cops take down their information, but guess what? They never call back to get the full report. Shocker. Now, at 5:54, Emma went back to that 7-Eleven, and she used her debit card to buy a prepaid cell phone. The video surveillance showed her paying and then kind of just, like, lingering inside of the store. Again, she was just, like, nervously looking out the windows and looking out the doors. Like, it looked like she was avoiding somebody or trying to make sure she was safe. It was definitely suspicious. She definitely looks paranoid and nervous. And that cell phone that she bought was never activated to this day. Never. 6 o'clock is when she got back to the shelter, and that's when she found out that her mom was coming to visit, and then she ran away. And then at 6:10, she got picked up by a taxi really close to the shelter. She told him to take her to the airport, and then she says, never mind. She says that she can't afford the taxi, and she's like, can you just drop me back off right where you picked me up? Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate it. Just drop me back off. And her family thinks that this was weird because they know that she had like $2,000 to $3,000 in her account. Like, she could absolutely afford the fare. So why did she do that? And also, where is this money from? I know she had that job at the, at the place, the Redfish Bluefish place. But that's a lot of money to just kind of like have in your account. I mean, good for her, but damn. So they thought that was weird. They then get back to where he was supposed to drop her off, like, you know, where he picked her up, and she's just like, can I sit in your car for a little while? And he's like, I guess so. And she starts acting really strange. She hears the dispatch radio, and she gets really, really nervous, and she's like, why is that talking? Like, she, like, pointed at it, and she, like, got quiet, and she was just like staring at, like, why did that make noise? What's going on? It's like, it's a radio. So she paid really, really quickly. She paid the fare with her debit card, and then she left. At 6:15, her friend Dennis saw her standing barefoot on a corner looking disoriented. She seemed too paranoid to cross the street is what, like, he thought. Like, she was just standing, there, like, looking around, like, nervous. She looked like she wanted to cross, but she couldn't bring herself to do it. Like, it looked like she was scared. So he asked her if she was looking for somebody or if she was being followed by somebody, but she doesn't really say anything. She just keeps frantically looking around. And Emma asks Dennis to walk with her for a little while, but then he just kept asking her questions, and she was just getting more and more uncomfortable. Like, you could tell by the second, like, everything he asked, she got uncomfortable. So then she just started walking on her own. So it was around 7 when Dennis went into a restaurant and he called the police, and he waited until they got there, and he, like, saw them talking with Emma. So he waited until he saw the police with Emma, and then he left thinking that she was safe, which I understand his thought, and, like, that's immediately probably what you'd think. I can't fault him because it's probably what I would do right away too, but if my friends never, like, see me, I hope my friends see me or anybody with a cop and then assume that that person is safe. Like, I know it's your natural thought, but stick around if you can and make sure that your friend or whoever is okay and safe. So it was 7:17 when the police said that they made contact with Emma. At that time, she was barefoot and she was, like, holding her shoes, and they were standing in front of the Empress Hotel. There was two officers, and they assessed her for 45 minutes. They said that she did not engage in conversation at all, but she really just kind of would just, like, shake her head, or she would answer with one word. Like, she was not associating with them at all. They said she looked like she was, like, far away, like she was nervous, and she was panicked, and she just was freaked out. They said that it took 30 minutes for her to even talk, and even then she only gave her name when they like begged her, like, girl, what is your name? She refused to put her shoes back on, and she said that she was just going for a walk and she had plans to meet with a friend. So then at 8 o'clock, the police were like, okay, you're not a threat to yourself or others. Bye-bye. Have fun. And that was the last time that Emma was ever seen, or so we think, until a couple years later. At 11 o'clock, Shelley got to the shelter and found out that Emma wasn't there, and then at 12, Emma was declared a missing person. That is a lot, so before we get into the investigation and the aftermath, let's take a little smoke break. One of my absolute favorite things to do, and I'm sure it's yours too, is smoke and watch movies. But every single year, without fail, as Oscar season approaches, I feel like I forgot every single movie that I watched, or I haven't heard of any of the movies that are up for nominations. But I want to be able to understand the memes and read along with the tweets on Oscar night, so what am I left to do? The good news is that four of my amazingly smart and talented film-loving friends will be analyzing movies that could be winning big this year in their new podcast, Oscar Bait. They'll be breaking down the movies and giving their only partly qualified opinions. If you love to talk movies, then subscribe to Oscar Bait Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. A new episode will be out every single Friday, so go listen to it now. I love you, girlies. So the next day was November 29th. The hotel that Emma's car was at, that was like supposed to be towed the day before, they just arranged for her car to be towed. They were probably like, oh damn, like Emma didn't show up. Like, I guess now we just have to tow it. So then the police find it at the tow lot, and it had almost all of her stuff in it. It had her passport, her journals, her laptop, her camera, her library books, like everything, all of her stuff. So they take her car in for evidence, and while this is happening, Emma's mom is at the shelter learning about how Emma was struggling in the few weeks leading up to her disappearance. And that would really fucking suck as a mom. Like, when you have no idea that your child is struggling that much until you start getting some calls, and then you get there to help her and she's gone already, and you find out that it was so much worse than you already thought. Like, I could not imagine going through that as a mother or like a friend or anything, but I mean, a mom especially, like that would really, really be difficult. So they told her all about how they think she was depressed and possibly suicidal, and they gave some examples of why they think that, like giving her things away and the whole like talking furniture incident. Like, they were just saying that she's acting erratic and we don't really know what's going on. Later that day, there was an unconfirmed sighting of Emma at a lifestyle market in the area. And then on December 2nd, there was another weird encounter / unconfirmed sighting of Emma that was called into the police. This guy said that somebody who looked just like Emma, he could have swore it was Emma, just went up to him at the Inner Harbor and told him to remember the name Emma Filipov and asked him to repeat the name 3 times, which... weird if true. There are so many reasons for her to be like, please remember my name, that I like, do you think that, like, did she think that she was in danger? Did she not know where she was, or like what was going on? Like, did she just want somebody to know, like, I was here, Emma Filipov was here, tell somebody that Emma Filipov was here? Like, I have so many questions. So on December 5th, around 11 a.m., the prepaid credit card that Emma bought was flagged for use at a gas station. So everybody was like, oh, like we might have a sign of Emma. So then they track it down, and the man who used it ended up being cleared, though. It wasn't Emma, it was somebody else. And he said that he found the card on the side of the road and he was just too drunk to remember where he found it. He was an alcoholic. And at first he lied and said he knew exactly where it was. But then he was like, actually, I didn't know where this was. I lied. I was drunk, but I know that I found it and it was sealed, and then I waited like a week to use it and all I bought were cigarettes. So they gave him a polygraph and he passed it and he was cleared and he really wasn't like suspicious at all. But then in May of 2014, so we're kind of jumping forward in time by about a year and a half. In Gastown, British Columbia, a man was caught on surveillance cameras at a store with a crumpled up missing persons poster, and that missing persons poster was of Emma. Now, this man claimed that Emma was his girlfriend and that he wanted to be left alone, that he was just sad, but like, honey, doesn't really make sense. Some sources say that he shouted, quote, "She's with me," unquote, but it's not that, I don't know if that actually happened or not. Like, some things say he did, some things don't mention that at all, so I don't know. But this dude has never been identified, even though there is a clear surveillance footage of him. You can see his shirt and his tattoos, and he has like a noticeable limp, but nobody has come forward, and none of Emma's friends say that she had a boyfriend. Like, it's fucking crazy. Who is this man? He's just out there living his life day to day, like doing his thing, and I'm going to be awake at night for multiple days just wondering who he is. Like, in what world is that fair? So right after Emma went missing, a search team made up of Emma's friends, family, and a group of volunteers looked through the area of Victoria and all around the island, just looking for any trace of Emma. They even looked in trails and parks and in nature, since she said that she was interested in just like living off the grid. They looked into the water and all throughout the harbor, but they never found anything. No sign of Emma, no trace of her, nothing. The search eventually widened to throughout, like, Canada, mainland Canada, and the United States. Wherever there was any possible sightings of Emma, they searched. But most sightings were just women who looked a lot like Emma. There was a PI that was hired to... I shouldn't say that. There was a private investigator that was hired to work on the case for about a year, but even he couldn't find anything. I don't know if it was a man. That was just me assuming. Even they couldn't find anything. Psychics and mediums also provided input, but it never really couldn't lead investigators anywhere. I always love when they have a psychic come in, because that's when you know that those white men are just at the end of their tail. They're like, fine, like, let's get the woman in here and see if she knows what's going on. In 2014, CBS launched this big Finding Emma campaign on social media and on TV. A homicide detective and forensic pathologist and a criminologist all worked on the case, and they reviewed all the evidence, but they also got nowhere. There's a documentary made that you can watch on CBS, but it really just raised awareness, which obviously is needed, but it didn't discover anything new, and they didn't make any breaks in the case. There's a $25,000 reward out for Emma, but there have been no confirmed sightings of her since that night in November. There were lots of sightings and rumors about Emma after she disappeared, and even now, some of her friends believe that she was hitchhiking and just doing whatever she wanted to do and she was having a good time. There was a lot of people that reported that the missing persons posters had been ripped down on the east side of Victoria, and one person even claims that they saw Emma ripping down her own missing persons poster, which that has a lot of implications in itself, but like I said, one person said it. Could be a rumor, could be nothing. Some employees at a hunting and fishing store claim that Emma came in a few weeks before she went missing and asked them, like, how to disappear. She told them that she had a stalker that was following her that she needed to hide from, and they were like, bro, I don't know what to tell you. Then, after that, there were two unconfirmed sightings of her in 2014, and both of them were really, really close, like, within 30 minutes to an hour, within where her family was. I don't know if I said that right. It made no sense, I don't think. And neither did that. See? I can't make sentences. But anyway. And then in 2016, a friend of Emma's claimed that they saw her sleeping outside in the British Columbia, and they reported it to the police, but once again, that is unconfirmed. Emma's mom, Shelley, has never given up the fight to find Emma. A team of volunteers work with her mom to help her go through the tips that come in and follow up on sightings and do interviews and everything like that. They have a Facebook page called Help Find Emma Filipov, which of course will be linked below. And every single rumor that's brought up, every single possibility, anybody who comes forward, anybody with a tip, Shelley and her team investigate it. In 2018, a new witness came forward that really helped move In 2018, a new witness came forward that kind of helped move the search somewhat forward. This man came forward and he said that around 5 a.m. on November 29th, 2012, the day after Emma was last seen, he was on his way to work, he was new at his job, and he was already running kind of late. And he saw this young woman on the side of the road, and she was just like walking back and forth, and so he knew something wasn't right, so he pulled over to help her, and she just hopped right on into his car. Like, okay, girl. And he noticed that she was barefoot and she was soaking wet, and it seemed like she was walking around all night. Little did he know, it was all day and all night, which is so sad. So she asked him if he could drive her to Colwood, and he was like, I'm already late, so I'm not going to take you all the way there, but like, I'll drive you a little closer and drop you off. So they drove for like 5 minutes, and then he dropped her off at a gas station, and as soon as she got out of the car, he said that she started acting erratic and paranoid again, like pacing back and forth and like trying to figure out, like just looking like very paranoid and upset and scared. And then eventually she did take off in the direction of Colwood. He didn't realize at that time who he had picked up that morning, and he didn't realize it for a long time. It took him a couple years, and he didn't come forward about it until 6 years after it happened. Almost 6 years. He called the Vancouver police, and they told him to contact Crime Stoppers, so he did, but then he never got a follow-up on his tip. Why can't people just do their fucking jobs? Your name is literally Crime Stoppers, and somebody's giving you something that could stop a crime, and you're not gonna listen? I literally do not understand. So then this man took it upon himself to reach out to Emma's mom, Shelley, directly. And another huge advocate in Emma's case, Kimberly Bordage, which, shout out to her, we have the same name, except I would never go by Kimberly. She interviewed him, and they released a podcast called The Search for Emma Filipov. So go listen to it. I am also going to link that below. So Kimberly went to go search that area that the man picked Emma up at with a canine expert, also named Kim, which is also not my name. My name is Kimmy. I don't go by Kim or Kimberly, but, you know, it's the same name. It was funded by a GoFundMe campaign, which is nice, but, like, why can't we just, like, fund the things that matter? Like, even GoFundMe is, like, I know this case isn't in America, but even GoFundMe is, like, America, can you please give your people healthcare so that they don't have to rely on crowdfunding from us? Like, that's when you know. So they searched the entire area, but they got nothing, and so far, that's really kind of how the story ends. There have been no confirmed sightings of Emma since November of 2012, and to this day, she remains a missing person. If you have any information or any leads that might help find Emma, you can call Crime Stoppers at 1-800-222-8477 or the Victoria Police Department non-emergency line at 250-995-7654. Or what might be the most productive thing would be to contact Emma's family, and you can do that at helpfindemmafilipoff.com. Filipoff is F-I-L-L-I-P-O-F-F. These will all also be linked in the description. There are a lot of theories out there about what might have happened to Emma. There are a lot of people who think she went missing on her own accord and that she's still out there just living life how she wanted to, that she just escaped and she ran away, which sometimes I think too, but then I have to ask why. She was obviously experiencing a mental breakdown around the time of her disappearance, and she didn't have the resources to get the help that she needed. But she was also so private that we have no way of really knowing if she was being stalked or if she was just very mentally ill and paranoid, maybe schizophrenic, and thought she was being stalked. Like, there's so much that we just don't know. She was so private, and the police fucking fumbled the bag. The man who ripped down the poster and maybe yelled that, quote, she's with me, is suspicious as fuck to me, because the way he's never been identified just freaks me out. He could be the guy who was stalking her from culinary school. He could also just be some random who abducted her. He could actually be her boyfriend, like he claims. Like, who knows? Because she was very private. Who knows if we would know if she had a boyfriend? He could be somebody who killed her, and he could be, like, literally absolutely nobody at all. A lot of people, kind of myself included, think that she went out with the intentions to start a new life. Like, she just wanted to run away from whatever was scaring her and was making her feel paranoid, but she was unwell and she didn't think it through. And it was November in Canada. She might have just been freezing and not had the supplies to survive. Her mental health was deteriorated, and she might not have even thought about, like, what am I gonna eat, or how am I gonna get water, or where am I gonna get warmth. Like, I don't think that could have not hit her until she was like, oh fuck, what am I gonna do? Most people agree that she was suffering from paranoid schizophrenia. The incident that points to that the most was the talking furniture. Like, she was aware that something was wrong, but in that moment, she just had to take care of the issue that the furniture was talking to her. She needed to get it out of there. I really, really, really hope that someday in the future, we will hear that Emma was found just living her life out there after she got the help that she needed, and she's doing well now. I am absolutely holding out hope for her, and so are her friends and her family and just a lot of different communities online. We really, really, really need to just focus on putting more funding into helping mentally ill people and put more money towards those trained professionals and being a little bit more compassionate and just, you know, helping each other out and funding that, and not the police, who clearly didn't do shit and usually make the situation worse. This one is a lot, and it leaves me wondering about so many things. I would love to hear your theories and your thoughts about the case and about Emma. If you think that she's alive or what you think happened, like, let me know. I would love to talk about it. Like, share your opinions with me, please. I hope you have an amazing rest of your day or night or whenever it is. I don't know when you listen to me. So whatever point of your day it is, I hope it's been good, or I hope it continues being good, or it gets better. Stay healthy, stay happy, drink water, and if you ever decide that you want to disappear, that's totally fine. Just make sure you have a plan in place. Bye!